Candles. Written by Juliana Harvard. Copyright 1998 by Juliana Harvard. Part 1. The Rehearsal. For as long as she could remember, Angela Taylor had wanted candles at her wedding. She wanted lots of candles, in polished gold stands, tapering from the altar in the center out to each side of the rostrum, and single candles in clear crystal lamps at the end of every pew along the center aisle. But now she stood alone in the chapel, seeing only the barrenness of an empty stage, waiting for the others to arrive for rehearsal. At once she was aware of a presence. She didn't have to turn at all to know that it was Mark's arms that encircled her waist, his wet lips that caressed her neck, his warm body that always sparked erotic energy. "Hello," he murmured into her ear, his hot breath sending electric swirls through her. "I wanted candles," she said softly, taking in a deep breath and letting it out in a slow sigh as she leaned against Mark's chest.
"Yes, I know," he said, "so did I. But..."
"But Mom told us from the beginning how Burlington Chapel is about dripless candles, and how we'd be spending our honeymoon scraping wax off the carpet. We have our Unity candles," Mark cooed, in his little boyish way. "Only if Mom can rent a stand to put them on," Angela sighed with a hint of desperation. "Anyway, how are we going to light the Unity candles when there won't be any other candles burning?" Mark said nothing, only looked at her with the same blank stare he gave to his monitor screen when a computer program he was writing seemed to loop into a dead end. Suddenly the double doors in back burst apart, as chattery giggles and a catcall or two exploded into the chapel. Then someone yelled in mock remonstrance, "Be quiet, you turds, this is a church." The wedding party had arrived, and Angela felt a hot flush as she glanced quickly through the crowd to see if Mom was there. Nope. Only my impudent sister Cherie and our funky but lovable friends, let's see, Chuck, Shelley, Dave, Misty, Paul, Nanette. "Where's your sister Tina and your moms?" Angela directed toward Mark. He shrugged, glancing at his watch. "They'll be here. Their plane got in 2 hours ago." Angela rolled her eyes, her face tightening. "I just hope Mom and Dad don't say anything stupid to your mom and. Mark chuckled. "Mom and Lorna are cool," he reassured her. "Don't worry." But Angela did worry that Mom and Dad would, at best, totally ignore the existence of Mark's two lesbian moms, or, at worst, would cause some unthinkably horrible scene. The two sets of parents, one in California, one in Texas, had never met, never spoken on the phone, never even emailed. Mark was laughing now, playfully shoving Dave away, undoubtedly for some irreverent remark he had made, Angela could tell by his familiar smirk. Now the girls were filling the space around her, pulling her from any thoughts of candles in the chapel. "When will the flowers be delivered? How are you going to keep Mark from seeing you in the morning? How many gifts do you have so far?" Angela shivered, a good kind of shiver, grinning, answering, not answering, listening to everyone else's excitement, feeling her heart pound, hearing in her mind's ear the hauntingly incessant music of Enya that she and Mark had chosen for their wedding. When Tina, Lorna, and Mark's mom Jessie arrived, Angela was the first to see them come in. "We're just waiting for my parents and Pastor Green now," she said with a calm facade to no one in particular. "Oh, Mom." Angela hugged Jessie just after Mark did. "Thank you for buying the Unity candle set for us. They're the only candles we're having, you know. Pastor Green arrived just after John and Mary Taylor, and he took full charge of the wedding rehearsal, choreographing every movement of every attendant." Lorna sat at the sound system mixer board, manipulating the cassette tapes and CDs and MIDI discs that contained the full program of wedding music. This was the first time Angela had heard all of the music together in a contiguous whole. "I hope it's okay," Lorna said to Angela during a brief break. Angela's eyes sparkled. "Oh, yes, thank you. It's perfect." Part 2. The Dinner. Somehow the rehearsal passed, and Angela realized that her mom and dad had not had any conversation at all with Lorna and Jessie. There was no time, no need. Now everyone, in separate cars, was on their way to Rainforest Cafe for the rehearsal dinner. Grandma would be joining them, as well as an assortment of aunts, uncles, and cousins. Angela wasn't really sure who all would be there. "What do I do?
Angela rushed out to Lorna as she approached the jungle tree entrance of Rainforest. There isn't anyone at the reservations desk. Lorna looked around. I'll find someone, she offered, and Angela sighed in relief. She had enough to worry about with Grandma now, who had not been at all silent about that awful lifestyle of Mark's mother. Be prepared, Angela had already warned Lorna and Jesse. I have no idea what Grandma's going to say. Lorna was motioning now to Mark and Angela. Is everyone here yet? They're ready for us. The entourage passed between two floor-to-ceiling tanks that held colorful tropical fish, into the darkened dining area that spanned nearly a half-city block. Bamboo tables and chairs were arranged generously among the thick simulated rainforest foliage that had been populated with life-size animated monkeys, birds, cheetahs, gorillas, boas, and two elephants standing guard by the back wall. Each species took turns moving, calling out in their unique voices, demanding attention from the diners, piercing through a background of tropical rainforest music. In the center was a waterfall through which light passed like a prism, creating a giant rainbow above it. Mark and Angela went in first, seating themselves across from each other at the far end of the long table that the head waitress had prepared. Mom and Dad followed Angela, Jesse and Lorna followed Mark. Cherie and other family members followed Mary and John Taylor. The bridesmaids and groomsmen filled the two round tables behind them. Then Grandma came in. The only seat left was the one next to Lorna. What shall we order? Angela spoke to Mark, as if they were the only two in the restaurant. They both turned their full attention to the menu. Then Angela saw them. Candles, she exclaimed. How pretty. Indeed, tropical fruit-scented votives had been placed on the tables, glowing, warming, friendly flames, flickering light onto the table, reflecting in the silver, casting shadows on the linen tablecloth. Mark looked around, scanning the entire seating of persons without turning his head, only his eyes. There's 21 of us, he commented quietly to Angela. She nodded, wordlessly, not really hungry, but wanting the famous rainforest waffle fries. Mark ordered for himself and for Angela. Then they waited for the food, everyone busily sipping piña coladas. Angela heard her father's voice, laughing, teasing, as she had heard it for the past 19 years. She dared to turn slightly, to look, and she saw that Dad and Mom both were in rapt conversation with Mom's Jesse and Lorna. She looked at Mark, whose gaze had never left Angela. He winked, his dark eyes dancing with delight as if to say, "See? It's really okay." Grandma stared silently ahead, sometimes talking to Cherie, but never looking in Lorna's direction. Then, "Hello, I'm Lorna Knight," Angela heard her say in her typically unabashed manner. "You must be Angela's grandmother. I'm glad to meet you." And Lorna extended her hand toward the gray-haired woman. Angela held her breath for a long moment, then watched in amazement as Grandma returned Lorna's handshake and smiled graciously, like any proper Southern lady. And pleasant conversation ensued. Angela stared, almost disbelieving. But she ate the waffle fries hungrily, along with a safari salad and boa breadsticks. Finally, Angela watched the waitress bring the check to Lorna, assuming that she was the person in charge. Lorna and Jesse looked at the total, looked at each other. Angela squirmed in her chair. She knew that Lorna and Jesse had agreed to split the cost of the meal between her and Mark, a meal for the parents and the attendants. But they hadn't known about the aunts, uncles, and cousins. And Grandma. Angela saw Jesse say something to her mom but couldn't quite hear it. She saw Mom turn away without responding. She watched as the rest of the family, meal finished, stood and left the dining area, talking amongst themselves, not looking back, not offering to pay anything. Quickly Angela moved around the table and placed a thick wad of paper money into Jesse's hand. "Sweetie, this is way more than your share," Jesse exclaimed. "Mom." Mark nudged Jesse, nodding, placing one finger over his lips. Whatever the price for family peace, Angela knew it was worth it. And, as she and Mark left, hand in hand, the candles on the table still burned. Part 3. The Ceremony. Morning came early for Angela. She had been awake every hour throughout the night, sleeping fitfully, too warm, too cold, too tired. She just knew that she would forget to take something to the church, that someone wouldn't show up at the last minute, that she would discover that the amiability between Mom, Dad, and Grandma, and Lorna and Jesse, had been only a dream. But the girls, her sister, and her bridesmaids who had slept over at her house, were up and buzzing about, scrambling for showers, having orange juice and toast, giggling and chattering about their own boyfriends, their hoped-for weddings. Dad had already carefully packed Angela's wedding dress into its garment bag and put it in the car. From a shelf high in her closet, Angela brought out the velvet boxes that held her diamond necklace and earrings and Mark's wedding ring, carrying them with her, not losing sight of them. Angela had planned carefully that she would arrive at the church a full hour before Mark, who had to pick up two of the groomsmen and their tuxes. She immediately sequestered herself in the bridal room of Burlington Chapel, got dressed, waited for her stylist Betty, who would do her hair and makeup. She sat still like a porcelain princess in her elegant ivory gown, exquisite with beadwork and lace. She watched the girls get into their hunter green satin gowns and busy themselves with their own hair and makeup. Tina, who was in charge of the reception food and busy in the kitchen, came in last, after she had made sure that the reception assistants knew what to do. Jesse, wearing a burgundy lace dress, came in with Tina. Then Mary Taylor came into the room. "Mom," Angela called frantically. "Did you get the stand for the Unity candles?" "Yes, dear," Mary answered. "They're already set up in the front." "But how?" Jesse spoke now. "Dave will have a small votive, already lit. During the ceremony, your mom and I will walk up together to the platform and we'll each light a taper from the votive." Mom nodded in agreement. "Oh." Angela felt a flood of relief. Mom is actually going to walk with Jesse. Just then Angela heard familiar music, the music of Enya. She jerked upwards, freeing a lock of hair that Betty had just put into the curling iron. "Relax," Tina said to her. "Lorna just started the prelude. We've got a whole half hour left." Angela tried very hard to relax. "Are the guys here yet?" Angela needed to know. "Yeah, but Dave had to take Chuck back home to get black socks. He was wearing white socks with his Nikes." Tina lightly patted the shoulder of her soon-to-be sister-in-law. "But Nanette's already out there with the guest book." "Guests? Guests are arriving." "Yes, yes, this is my wedding day. This is the day I become Mrs. Mark Daniels. This is it, a 3-year relationship becomes a permanent commitment. Oh, God, please let everything go okay." It was nearly 10 o'clock, and Pastor Green knocked on the door of the bridal room. "Do you have the marriage license?" he asked, poking only his head into the room. Angela gasped. "Oh, Mom, it's at home, on the coffee table. Oh, I just knew there would be something. Oh, Mom, oh, there's no time." "It's okay," Pastor Green said to Angela. "I'll get it from your parents this afternoon. Don't worry about anything." The next moments became a blur in Angela's memory, to be relived only when she and Mark would watch the videotape a week from now. Behind closed doors, she could hear the music for the seating of the parents, for the procession of the attendants. Then she was holding Dad's arm, feeling its strength, its protection, its security that she was leaving for Mark's love and passion. She moved forward. "I hear our music now, the Enya Book of Days, and I see Mark, waiting for me, waiting for this moment, waiting for our lifetime together." The music, swelling to its climax, Pastor Green's words, Lorna's vocal solo, Mark's strong hands holding hers, all whirled into a kaleidoscope of sound and color and light. "Repeat after me," said Pastor Green. And Angela and Mark repeated the vows. And then it was time. Pastor Green stepped aside when the Enya China Roses began, and Angela and Mark had a clear view of the Unity candles. They were ivory in color, matching Angela's gown, with fluted ribbons curling around the shafts, showing the hunter green and burgundy colors of the wedding, the trousseau, the colors that were Mark and Angela's very own. Mary and Jesse lit the tapers, each giving life to a single flame. Then Angela and Mark, using the lighted tapers, together lit the single candle in the center, careful to not extinguish the fire of the individual candles as they placed them securely back into their holders. In the glow of the flames, Angela and Mark exchanged the rings, kissed when Pastor Green told them they could, and in a fiery rush exited from the chapel, not hearing any of the recessional, not knowing or caring if any of the attendants followed. Part 4. The Honeymoon. It was nearly dark when Angela and Mark checked into the honeymoon suite of the hotel, whose location was necessarily unknown to their attendants, especially to Dave and Chuck. Mark had carried in their bags and had gone back out to the car for something. Angela was lying on the pink velour comforter of the king-size bed, eyes closed, when he returned. "How was the reception?" she asked, without stirring. "I think everything went well, although I can't swear to it. I can't really remember any details." Mark lay down beside her and stretched his long lanky body like a sleek greyhound. "Because of the time we took with the pictures, we didn't have much time at the reception. We didn't get to talk with many of our friends that took the time to drive down to see us. Tina did a great job with the food." "Yes, my sister's cool. And the wedding cake was actually delivered on time. No one spiked the punch. I remember the candles now, did you see them? The hunter green and burgundy floating candles in dishes on the tables." Mark's hand found Angela's. "Yes, that was cool, hey? Candles, lots of candles. Did my mom and your mom actually hug when everyone was saying goodbye, or did I just imagine it?" "They did. Your grandma even hugged Lorna." "Amazing. I wonder if it was just the excitement of the wedding. I wonder if they'll really ever even speak again." Mark was silent for a long moment, knowing that Angela didn't really expect any answer. Then, "I'm sorry Dad didn't show up." Angela stiffened. "We didn't expect him to." For the first time since the wedding weekend began, she thought about Tom Daniels. Why was Mark forcing her to think about him now? Everything had been so lovely, until now. "He'll be there when we get home." "Yet. He really hates your mom, doesn't he?" "Yet. Well, he's been out of prison a whole year now. He's got a good job, finally. Why can't he just get over it? It wasn't your mom's fault, you know." "I know. But that's just Dad. He's very angry. But it's not fair to you to have to live with his anger." Angela's voice began to rise, as it always did when they discussed Mark's dad. She turned toward Mark, stroking his sparsely bearded cheek. "But we have to live in his house," he said, "for now, anyway." Angela knew it was true. Since college graduation just last summer, and facing years of repaying student loans, they had little choice except to continue living in Tom Daniels' house, at least until Mark had been at his new job long enough for a substantial promotion. "Are you hungry?" Angela hoped to change the subject. "Not really. Me neither." Mark sat up on the bed, then moved around in the dimly lit room. Angela opened her eyes and watched him curiously. He opened the cardboard box he had brought in, and took from it the large center candle from the Unity set and placed it on the stand beside their bed. "Look," he said, "it burned down low enough in the center so that we can put this votive in the hole." As he said that, he put the votive in the center of the large candle and lit it. The flame was just below the top of the large candle, and its glow permeated the iridescent shaft, burning deep inside. The two tapers, once lit, lay unseen inside the cardboard box. They would burn again, in time, but not tonight. Angela said nothing, half surprised that Mark Daniels, the high-tech computer programmer, would be so sentimental as to have brought the Unity candles with them. He came back to the bed, began to embrace her, unfastening the top buttons of her shirt, kissing her, caressing her bare shoulders. "It doesn't matter about them," Angela heard herself say quietly. "What? My parents? Grandma? Your dad? Even your mom and Lorna?" She said it more to herself than to Mark, but she had to say it out loud. "We are Mark and Angela Daniels." Yes. Mark was nuzzling his face now into Angela's breasts, running one hand through her light brown curls. As always, Angela felt the fire growing inside her, the fire that was always there when Mark touched her, when he looked into her eyes, when he spoke her name. And the single flame inside the ivory candle with the hunter green and burgundy ribbons burned, steady and strong, through a very long and intimate night.